Welcome to the Spiritually Lit meeting. Each week, we're honored to host powerful speakers from around the world, sharing their stories, experiences, and hope with us. All of our speakers are recorded and shared through our Enneagram YouTube channel and our audio speaker WhatsApp group, so the message can reach those who need it. If you're listening to this recording and you're struggling, seeking help, or simply have a question, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can contact us anytime at spirituallylit24@gmail.com. We promise to get back to you. Tonight, we have invited Cameron F. and Nikki M. to share their experience on the beautiful topic now about sex. After that, the meeting will be open for sharing back or asking questions. We will give you a sign 10 minutes before the time's up, Nikki and Cameron. Thanks so much for making the time and the effort to come share with us. And with that, I'll hand it over to you guys. Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you, Nick. And it's great to be here. It's an interesting subject, one that doesn't get a lot of airtime, but it's kind of fun to delve into. My name is Cameron. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic addict, doesn't drink or use. Sobered up on November 21st, 2003. And because I met someone in these rooms that understood the instructions as laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they showed me a very simple process where I could connect to the God of my understanding and be able to easily control my desire to drink, use, or act out. And that's had a very profound effect on my life in 21 years. In fact, I've done more in the last 21 years of my life than I did in the first 46 when I sobered up. And since we're talking about sex and relationships, this program allowed me to rebuild a relationship with my wife, whom I had destroyed my marriage by the time I came into the program. And through the tenets of steps 4 and 5 and 8 and 9, I was able to apply those principles to that destroyed relationship, and it had quite a turnaround. And that I was sharing earlier, my wife and I are celebrating 35 years of marriage. She's my best friend, my business partner, my confidant, my soulmate, and that's a direct tribute to this amazing program of Cocaine Anonymous. Nikki, come on in.
Hi, everybody. I'm Nikki M., and I'm a grateful member of this fellowship and many others. And everything that Cameron said is facts, not fake news, because Cameron is not only my sponsor, he's my neighbor. I can actually see his bedroom window from here. So, long story short, how do I qualify? Once I start, I can't stop. And I can't control the amount of what I'm taking in that moment. So I'm suffering an illness that only a spiritual solution will solve. And I called my neighbor Cameron one day and I said, my sponsor fired me. And he said, okay, Nikki, I'll come over. And I was in my Noodle Nikki bathrobe, which I still have today, 9 years ago. I'm number 255 on Cameron's roster of sponsors or sponsees, I should say. And my life is beyond my wildest dreams. There's a line in our book on page 19 that says, it says, a few of us are fortunate enough to make a full-time, basically, volition out of this. And Cameron F. and Nikki M., we're full-time sponsors. So I'm grateful to be here. And before we came on the meeting, we did come prepared because we're serious about recovery. And so my sponsor is even weirder than I am. And he's put together something for us to listen to. So, Cameron, if you want to cue that up, and we're just going to take a few moments to listen to it. And what's going to happen is this is really the story about now about sex. And you're going to hear a journey. We're going to start with the problem and you're going to end with the fake solution. And then we're going to get into the real solution. So hit it, Cameron.
Thanks, Nikki. Here we go.
Sex, crime, crime, cat. I'm too sexy for my love, too
trying to leave me, and I'm too sexy for this song.
I could never understand, and that's why I fell in love with my right hand. And that's why I'm a wanker, I'm a wanker, and it does me good like it bloody well should. I'm a wanker, I'm a wanker, and I'm always pulling my hood.
Okay, welcome everybody to Spiritually Lit. We're going to talk about sex today. Nikki M and Cameron F here, and I'll kick it off just the prime to pump here, Nikki. I'll kick it off with a reading, and then you and I can weigh in on it. So the problem, we're going to start with the problem, then eventually we'll work out the solution. So the problem as stated in the big book, and of course, pages 68 to 70 delves into the problem of sex. Now about sex, many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question, and it's easy to get way off track, especially in today's society with so many wild variations of the human equation out there. We find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes. Perhaps one set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. And then we have those voices that cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of our troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind, and they see its significance everywhere. One school would have no flavor for their fare, and the other would have us on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. And let's open it up, Nikki. Why don't you kick in first here?
All right. Well, everybody, please know that when you're taking your sponsees through Cocaine Anonymous, open them up to the other addictions that will follow once they stop cocaine. That is the penises and the farfallas and the paychecks and all that good stuff that comes with those acting out addictions. But what Cameron talked about here is that we need an overhauling. We don't just stop drinking and stop using drugs. We need an overhauling. Men and women of God, don't go to bed lightly with anybody. We're going to read that for later on. But Cameron said this, we want to stay out of this controversy. Why? God is the properly appointed authority. See, when Cameron found me basically on the floor of my house dying, he didn't say, Nikki, go stop sleeping with this guy. Start doing this. He said, follow the instructions of this book and create your own 100. He stayed out of the controversy of his opinions on my sex life. That's not his job. His job was to take me through the steps. His job was to explain his experience, strength, and hope. But no way was it for him to give opinion on outside matters. That's a tradition. And it's not just for the rooms or for meetings, everybody. We do not have opinions on outside matters. And that's outside the realm of my energy field right here. So keep your butt shut when it comes to other people's sex lives. God is the properly appointed authority. And I'll end it here, Cameron, on this thought. It says right here, overhaul. Google these words if you do not have master command of the English language. Overhauling. That doesn't mean that you do the things you want to do anymore. You have to stop doing what you want to do. This is very, very radical. Get in here, Cameron.
So do they still do co-ed treatment, like where they have men and women at?
Yes,
at
the, and they all come out into marriage after 2 days.
Do they? Does that happen over there in the UK and Europe also? You know,
yes, it happens everywhere.
I always found it really bizarre you would have co-ed treatment, because, you know, most addicts, when they come into the rooms of CA, like, the, you know, they're barely toilet trained apes, right? They eat, they shit, they fuck. And that's really about all they're good for. They're on reptilian brain mode, right? Fight, flight. And so they go to the treatment centers. And of course, if you've been to a treatment center that's co-ed, one of the rules is you don't have sex with the clients. And of course, inevitably, what do they find? They find two people going at it under the stairwell, and of course they're throwing out. And when they're looking at the treatment center, you know, counselor saying, well, why are you throwing us out? And they go, well, you can't follow the rules. Well, if I could follow the fucking rules, I wouldn't be here in the first place. You know, like, oh my God, it's just mind-boggling the way these organizations treat the attitudes around sex. And it may, you know, like, I'm not saying that's a good idea, but come on, you know, these people are, you know, just short of being feral animals. And they bring this stuff into our rooms too, you know, sometimes from the podium. And I don't want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. I remember early on, I thought maybe as a man, I should stand up against, you know, guys that are preying on women. But I find the women can just be just as predatorial as the men. And I did not sign up to be anyone's crusader or a saintly protector. But I do say from the podium, looking for a relationship in 12-step rooms is like going to the junkyard hoping to find a new car. It ain't gonna happen. Or going to bankruptcy court and looking for a business partner. It's just a bad idea. Of all the relationships I've seen trying to form within the rooms, very few. I can count on maybe one hand the number of relationships I've seen work on the long term. Most of them end in disaster. Relationships is hard work, right? Even for the muggles, you know, the normies, they, like, it's hard work. So you imagine you're an addict, you got all this baggage, and you decide you're attracted to someone in the rooms and you want to have a relationship with them, and they got all this baggage, and you come together, like, It's just not a very, very good idea. Yet I see it in the rooms. You know, one of the questions I want to put out there when it comes to the attitudes of sex in the rooms is, what do we do when we have people in the rooms acting out sexually in inappropriate ways? You know, what should we do about that? Should we throw them out? Should we, you know, make a note that these people are, you know, perhaps a danger to the common welfare of the group? I want to throw that into your minds to think about when we get to Q&A. How should we handle that? Should we permit it, tolerate it? They, like ourselves, are sick too. I don't know. It's worthy of more in-depth discussion. The sex stuff in my inventory wasn't as problematic as some of the ones that I have worked with. But sex is a, if you think about it, sex is a very powerful energy. It is the second biggest energy on the planet. You know what number one is? Food, digestion. You got to eat first, then get laid. So sex is number two. It's the second biggest energy on the planet. And it's a powerful energy to, you know, to mess around with. And as Nikki was alluding to, often when I'm working with drug addicts and alcoholics, they'll sober up on the alcohol and drugs. But like a whack-a-mole game, other kinds of addictions start to pop up. And sex becomes one of those addictive patterns. And of course, that's why we have a proliferation of all kinds of fellowship. We have Sex Porn Addicts Anonymous, Sex Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, Sex Love and Addicts Anonymous. And if you ever, as drugs and alcoholics, drug addicts and alcoholics, you ever have a chance to work with other people, with other addictions other than the primary substance abuse, it's a very enlightening experience to work with these people, especially the love and fantasy addiction. You know, I always thought that codependence, which is a primary problem with our relationships in and out of the rooms, is the underpinning addiction. Because you can be addicted to a substance. You could be codependent on a substance for your well-being, like drugs or alcohol. You could be codependent on a person for your well-being, which often happens. And, you know, the members of CODA and Al-Anon can certainly elaborate on that problem. Or you could be codependent on a process like sex, like love, fantasy, right? And I remember I worked with this one woman, and I used to call her the Black Widow. Now, her primary addiction was a sex addiction, and she liked to sleep with married men. That was her thing. If she could seduce a married man from his wife, and the more beautiful the wife was, the higher her validation dope was. Her validation went through the roof. It signified she was a woman, she was attractive, she had power, et cetera, et cetera. And once she had him, she was no longer interested. She was off to her next kill. I used to refer to her as the Black Widow. Sex is it's a powerful energy. I remember I worked with a rabbi once who almost broke his neck twice trying to orally gratify himself. You know, they talk about sex being, you know, you got the anorexics that they just become chaste and they'll have no more sex. And then you get the lusty ones. They want to have sex all the time. And my experience of working with the sexual addictions and other fellowships, even though I'm a drug addict alcoholic, but the approach I use in recovery, I use in any and all addictive approach with our instructions on how to cleave to a power greater than ourselves, which can restore us to sanity. But I find in the anorexic, the response to sex problems, is an anorexic or chaste approach, repressing the sexual energy. It's a hard energy to repress, and it comes out in a lot of strange ways. And I've seen it when I've worked with Muslims and Hasidic Jews and Mormons and priests. It's not an energy to mess around with. So, you know, the bulk of today's discussion is how are we going to get right with these God-given sexual powers that we have? Another thing about sex, too, when it's used in a lusty, indiscriminate way, that's not good either. You know, If you look at the statistics, you know, if you're really lusty about sex, or let's say you're a sex addict and you can't control your sex, you know, the joke is, well, you should go into porn, be a porn star, right? And when you look at the bios of the porn stars of the 90s, it all reads the same way. They're all dead. And they either died of suicide, drug overdose, or murdered. That's the MO. Of the lusty sexually acting out behavior. It's a nasty energy, and it's a powerful energy. My former business partner, if he was alive today, he would have been diagnosed as a sex addict. He had over 1,000 partners throughout his adult life. And when he died alone. He died physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually bankrupt. He had over 1,000 relationships, and he died alone, empty, facing the abyss of his death. And he inherited the wind out of all those relationships. Now, that's a sad way to pass on.
Cameron, let me
Okay.
pop in here for a minute.
Yep.
Cameron, let me pop in because, you know, you're talking about sex a lot, but this is also about love. This is exchanging sex for love. This is also about when Cameron talked about anorexia. I'm sober 25 years, but you have a baby in your belly because you eat too much and you haven't had a relationship in 20 years and you put a dollar in the basket. That's not recovery. See, that is not full recovery. And so it says in our book, it actually says on page 102, we don't get better to stay in our house and jerk off in our basement all damn day. That's not recovery. And I am a retired burlesque entertainer who knows some porn stars who are not dead, but they're alone with no money, deep in their addiction. Because this is not about sex. Sometimes we exchange love for sex. Go deeper, everybody. Some of you can't live without your children, your dogs. This is replace sex when you're teaching this with love, with codependency, with the fantasy addiction, because it's all the same thing. But page 102 says, now you are getting back into the social life of this world again. Don't start to withdraw. Don't start to hide out and watch Netflix and every single porn episode that you missed from 1976, Ron Jeremy. Wake everybody up. We are here to go out and share this message, not to take people hostage, not to hang out in your mom's basement, and certainly not to exchange sex for love. Get back in there, Cameron. Sorry, I had to jump in though.
Yeah, the sex for love, you know, I'll end on this note and then we're going to take a look at what, you know, where do we go with this sexual energy, whether it be anorexic or, you know, full on lust. You know, I've often heard from many people sharing in a general way their sex conduct about ex-partners. And they say, you know what? I hate that person. I hate them with all my heart. But I'll say this. The sex was fabulous. Now, I've thought a lot about that response from hearing it from so many people. You know, even if you've got a partner who's really, really sexually active and you're having sex 3-4 hours out of the day, you still got to spend another 20 hours with that person in relationship. And if your relationship is predicated on the physical sex only, that's a lousy foundation for a relationship. It's a foundation of sand. And I've seen that manifestation so many times with the domestic and sex problems that addicts seem to face. But it's a powerful energy. And why do people, you know, succumb to it so often? So the way through it is to examine our sexual conduct, whether it be anorexic or whether it be, you know, overactive, is to review our instruction state. We're going to review our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom did we hurt? How did we, you know, unjustifiably, and that's the key word, unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness? Where was I at fault? What should I have done instead? And we get it down on paper and we look at it. By the way, when you're doing your sex inventory, don't put anything incriminating down in ink, right? You know, best to just discuss it, you know, orally, although I use that word with a little discretion. You know, there's a passage in our big book says those of us belonging to a religious denomination shouldn't, of course, want to go to confession.
We're not a glum lot. Can I jump in here real quick, or do you want to keep going?
No, you can elaborate on this and I'll come back in.
Yeah, please give me a second here. Own conduct. It doesn't say sex conduct. This is all conduct, you guys, years past. How was your conduct around your children? But I want to go deeper on what Cameron just said. This is a moral inventory. See, I don't care that you slept with your mother's brother's donkey's goat. That's not what I'm here for. I don't care about your actions. I want to know what your morals are. And your morals are that you hate yourself. That's why you're sleeping with a goat. Your morals are that you're lustful and irresponsible. That's why you're sleeping with your best friend's dad, Nikki. Oh, wait, sorry. I'm not supposed to do my moral inventory on camera. This is what happens. You guys don't need to know that I slept with my dad's best friend and ruined his relationship forever. You need to know that I'm lustful, that I'm irresponsible, that I'm selfish and don't give a shit on you or me or my dad. Like, this goes deep. So don't sit there and think that you're going to start listening and visualizing to someone's dirty past. Don't listen to that stuff. When people start telling me what they've done, I take them right to the step that says moral inventory. Google the word moral. Doesn't say actions. And then I want to remind everybody this. Where it says, did we unjustifiably arouse these things? Where are we at fault? Don't forget, how you show up is a mirror reflection. You show up like a lunatic, you are going to attract that energy back to you. Don't forget, we're in a spirit world here. I told Cameron I wanted a second to talk about spirit sex. I don't think this is the moment to do it, but we're here not as humans anymore or eating, defecating monkeys and mukakus. We are here as children of God. And children of God, don't let people enter into their bodies and share their DNA. Go deep. We're in a spirit world. Cameron, come back in here. But if you show up like a pile of horse shit, you're going to get flies. If you show up like a pretty singing butterfly, wow, you're going to attract sunflowers. Come in here, Cam.
So, you know, we look at our conduct over the years past. So we're going to, you know, we're looking at our moral inventory. And as Nikki said, you see, the thing, a 12-step program is a spiritual moral approach to the efficacy of our addiction, whether it be drugs, alcohol, or the acting out behavior. It's a spiritual moral approach. And we're left with that final option because, as we know in step one, anything secular, anything human, or even psychological doesn't seem to have the necessary power that allows me to control my desire to drink, use, or act out. So we need a deeper divine connection with something that has all the power, especially when you're dealing with powers like sex and food, alcohol, cocaine, crack, what have you. So we want to look at what's blocking us from having a greater relationship with that. And of course, sex conduct is a huge part of our inventory. You know, when Bill wrote the instructions, we reviewed our conduct over the years past and where we've been selfish, dishonest, and considerate. He did it specifically for sex, but those are good instructions for all harms to others. So when I'm looking at my sex conduct and I'm working with others, you know, I get them to tease out the main, you know, primary relationships. Ex-partners, ex-spouses is always a good place to start to look at what's going on here. What kind of harm am I arousing as a result of my sexual conduct? And then, you know, some people have had a lot of sexual activity out there, and they treat women or men in a specific manner. So I'll often have them do an inventory on women in general or men in general and tease out what are the character defects, what are the shortcomings that are blocking this person from an intimate two-way relationship with the one who has all the power. Now, if you know in your big book, and those of you that are familiar with the workbook that I created for the 12 Steps 4 Hours Workshop, we look at the harmful conduct that Bill lays out around his wife, Lois, and it shows up as harmful sex conduct. And what Bill had written down was having an affair, unjustifiably arousing jealousy, resentment, distrust. Lois felt inadequate, betrayed, unworthy, unloved. And that's the nature of the harm done. That's what we want to clean up when we're looking at sex conduct. So how do we make that right? So, you know, we do the moral inventory. Now, I'm extrapolating a little bit from Bill's history here and his inventory process. But what did he bring to the relationship with Lois? Well, he brought a lot of false pride, arrogance, to the point where he diminished his relationship with Lois enough that he felt that he could have relationships with other women and break his vows of marriage. The guiding principle often with sex conduct is lust. And lust is a nasty character defect. Lust is all about what I want. Lust is all about me. It's all about what I want to get out of it. And it's a very powerful defect. It's no wonder so many humans are seduced by it, because when you're experiencing that lust and that's coursing through your body and your adrenaline's kicking in and your sexual excitement is kicking in, it's a powerful defect that can come up with people. And through lust, it led Bill into another character defect, which was dishonesty and eventually infidelity. And then, of course, it's all about Bill and what he wanted. So we know it's selfish and it's self-seeking. Now, what was the self-seeking motive? Well, we can only kind of guess, because Bill didn't elaborate. It might be validation. It might have been recognition. Might have been intimacy. Maybe he wasn't getting enough with Lois or whatever. We can only guess. But we know there's self-seeking motives in play. It's obviously inconsiderate. Inconsiderate to the woman he's cheating on his wife with. And it's inconsiderate to his wife. It's irresponsible. You know, it is responsibility to Lois as a husband.
And it's the seven deadly sins, Cameron. Bottom line, if you're one of them, you're all of them. We've talked about that.
And yes, they usually come into play, and it's driven, you know, every character defect is driven by fear. You know, in Bill's case, it might have been the fear of no sex, the fear of intimacy, fear of divorce, fear of being alone. And by looking at these character defects, and I'll just switch it to me, if I'm bringing these to my marriage, I can then see these character defects and how does it affect my marriage? How does it affect the people I'm having relationships with? Well, it's obviously, with Bill, it's affecting Lois's self-esteem that he's cheating on her. It's affecting Lois's sex relations with her husband. It's affecting Lois's security in her relationship, her ambitions as a wife. And it could even affect their pocketbook or their money, especially if Lois decides to have a divorce. And of course, and that generates the unjustifiably aroused feelings of inadequacy, unworthiness, jealousy, resentment, etc. Now, the great thing about understanding our inventory when it comes to sex conduct is it also shows us the way out. Oh, and another character defect that comes up a lot, And I have this character defect in play with women. I get misogynistic. I objectify women. I reduce women through my false pride to the level of an object, a sexual object. And I don't know, you know, for you, some of you women, I don't think that's, you know, a nice way to be thought of when you're in relationship with someone, to be reduced to an object. And that's the misogyny. That's the objectification. Women do it too with men. So misandry is the opposite of what women go through with men, where they objectify men and reduce it to objectification. It's called misandry for men, for women towards men, and misogyny with men towards women. And of course, I'm just going to conclude. So it points to the way out. So what should Bill do instead in his relationship? Have humility to know himself, know his strengths, know his weaknesses, to be intimate, to be faithful, to be honest, unselfish, helpful, considerate, responsible, faith in God's love and wisdom, courage to be the husband he should be. And as a result of bringing those to the marriage, things start to clean up. It starts to affect his wife in positive ways, and it cleans up with what's going on in column two. Go ahead, Nikki.
Okay, well, let's get going on here. Let's get back into the book. Let's get right here.
This is why she's going to hell. She's so bossy.
I am. I love you. And hey, everybody, when they say men stick with women and women, or men stick with men and women stick with women, when you hear that in a preamble, that's fake news. If you're listening to this at a later date, I'm a woman. And I identify as a woman, actually as a spearhead. And Cameron is a man. And we worked together. And Cameron healed me, because through working with the opposite sex, I could see a man who was a good person. And through working with me, he could see a woman not as an object, as a child of God. So can we get in here in this paragraph where it says, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex partners. You know, I used to do that when I first came in. When Cameron first told me to do that, I was like, I want him tall. I want him rich. I want him to be a single dad like me. Oh, I had a checklist. And guess what? Because I have a loving, powerful God, I got all of that, but it wasn't the thing I wanted. Then when I got serious about God, I had one sane and sound ideal, a man who loves God first and foremost, and then God sent that to me. And are you testing each relationship and not just your sex relationship? Are you testing each relationship if it's selfish or not? See, is my relationship with Cameron selfish or not? Am I only wanting something from him? No, I'm actually want to help him grow this business that we do for God. It's called the Big Book Sponsorship Fellowship. Are you remembering always that your sex powers are God-given, or are you spreading your legs eagle, hoping that some guy's going to save you? You know, Cameron, we didn't even put on our little run-through here, relapse. Because most people relapse because they went to see their ex and they didn't like what they said. They didn't like what they saw. They got a resentment and they're dead. I mean, most of the time, and I'm a sponsor slut. Cameron knows this. He said, Nikki, go create your own 100. I created my own 1000 because I'm another kind of slut. And now I am a slut for God. What does that mean? That means that my sex powers are God-given and not to be used lightly. So please, everybody, you will put down your cocaine, you will put down your alcohol, and you are going to pick up something else, and it's not going to be good for anyone. Cameron?
Thanks, Nikki. So therefore, not to be used lightly or selfishly, neither despised or loathed. So sex relationships, chances are we have domestic troubles. Who's got domestic troubles?
Me.
Oh, by the way, men, here's the way to have a perfect relationship. Whatever your wife tells you to do, just do it.
And here's the perfect response. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. I've heard you say it so many times to your wife, Cameron. Yes, dear.
Actually, I have three phrases. Cameron, you left your underwear on the floor. Really? I didn't know. Sorry. Cameron, the toilet seat's up again. Really? I didn't know. Sorry. Cameron, you came too fast. Really? I didn't know. Sorry.
You forgot the one where she chases you around when you're eating toast and the crumbs. Cameron, there's crumbs everywhere. Really?
So chances are we have some domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up in women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We subjected each relationship, as Nikki said, to this test. Is it selfish or not? Now, this is an important take-home message. Don't share sex conduct at meetings, folks. The meetings are not safe for you to be sharing intimate details about sex in the meetings. They're not safe. That's why, you know, what goes on here stays here is absolute rubbish. That's why everybody knows who's banging who and who's cheating on whom and all that sort of stuff. And you got to remember, most of the people in the rooms, because they're stunted emotionally. How many of you met men and women in the rooms that are 13-year-old adolescent teenagers trapped in 30, 40, 50-year-old bodies? That's why everyone's so sensitive and everyone gets butt hurt when someone looks at someone else and all that crazy stuff. It's just, it's so you don't want to be sharing sex conduct at meetings. I got a meme I want to share with you as I kick open this next little part of our talk here. So just give me a
And
moment.
Cameron's favorite line when he walks into an in-person meeting is, "We don't fuck our brothers and sisters." Thank you, Cameron.
So here's the meme. This is the meme I saw on Facebook feeds this morning. My husband makes love to me 3 times a week, just once a week for me, but you're not married. Oh, I thought we were talking about your husband. Oh, that's funny. Oh, God. Okay. We don't share our
Well,
sex
wait,
conduct,
can I
but
talk about that 13th
yeah, go
stepping real
ahead, man.
quick?
Yeah,
Since
go
we're just
ahead.
getting in here and we got a few more, 10 more minutes, someone gave us more time. There's God. There is no 13th step in this program. And it's not an 11-step program, everybody. Because I see a lot of people thinking this is an 11-step program and a 13-step program. It's only 12 steps. See, page 102, and this is how I send my sponsees out. And Cameron sends me out like this too into the world. Page 102, your only job is to, no, your job is to be of maximum helpfulness. Nikki, is it helpful to sit on someone's husband's penis? No, it's not. So don't do it. Is it helpful to go into a room, a 12-step room, and look for somebody to save you? Al-Anon. Al-Anon, some of you in AA aren't real alcoholics. You're type 2 alcoholics, and you're in there looking for a new husband. Wake your sponsees up. They're really hiding in the rooms of AA, and they're sex and love addicts. They're hiding in the rooms of Al-Anon, and they're sex and love addicts. They're hiding in the rooms of CA, and they will go out and get real high and stick everything in every orifice because their lover does it. They're a type 2 drug addict, but they're a type 3 sex and love addict. See, when Cameron found me, I was going to kill me and my lover. These aren't bad Friday TV night movies that you're seeing in the rooms. These are true, real life stories. So we should probably get into the solution because the solution is not in 13 stepping. Cam?
Yeah, lust is like a drug. It just leads to a hedonistic, you know, and often in the worst case, an addictive lifestyle. Lust is a powerful, powerful drug. So the solution is first of all, we're not arbiters of anybody's sex conduct. I don't care who you sleep with, how you sleep with them. That's all your business. The solution is we let God be the final judge. God's the properly appointed authority, as Nikki said. If sex is very troublesome, the solution is we throw ourselves all the harder into helping others. As Nikki said, I didn't start getting into her moral conduct about sexual activity. I suggest you go out there and sponsor other people. And we think of their needs and work for them. By the way, if sex is troublesome, drinking is troublesome, using is troublesome, whatever's troublesome, the answer is always to throw yourself all the harder into helping others. And it quiets that imperious urge when to yield might mean heartache. Now, there's some prudent instructions as we wrap up here when you're making, you know, reparations around your sex conduct. Before you take drastic action, which might implicate others, secure their consent. We don't take hostages. So, for example, perhaps maybe you've been, you know, cheating on your spouse and your spouse doesn't know you've been cheating on them with her best friend. Should we tell our spouse about that? Well, you know, chances are if you share who you're having sex with, that's going to also expose the other person, and we take hostages. That's not the way to make the amend. That just creates a clusterfuck of a situation. So we want to be mindful about when we execute an amend that we don't take hostages. If we're going to involve someone else, we get their consent first. And we obtain permission, and then once we've obtained permission, you consult with the properly appointed authority. You know, if a sex behavior is criminal, you need to be talking with a lawyer. If there's a mental emotional component, your therapist, especially if you've had childhood trauma or, you know, sexual improprieties pre-puberty, you know, that's going to be worked out with a therapist as the properly appointed authority. Could be a medical situation. You need to work with your doctor. And lastly, you work with your big book sponsor on the moral inventory. And lastly, in prayer meditation, God directs us into what the next step should be. And if we've written, and you know, we've been thorough about our sex conduct, some of us have written down a lot. I always go for the big stuff, the primary relationships. You're going to noodle out a lot of those core defects by just looking at primary relationships. And we've listed and analyzed those resentments. We begin to comprehend. Here's the thing, and that always tells me whether or not someone's done a thorough 4 and 5, is they comprehend the futility and the fatality and the destructiveness of those character defects in all their relationships. Not just sex relationships, but any relationship. Now, Nikki talked about relapse. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does that mean we're going to get drunk, high, or continue acting out? Some people might tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on us and our motive. It's always about motive. Is your motive to be helpful is your motive self-centered? If we're sorry for what we've done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we'll be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. If not, if we're not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we're quite sure to drink, use, or act out. And we're not theorizing about this. So these are facts out of our own experience. Now, just before I close with the prayer on sex amends, Nikki, anything else
let
you want to add?
Let me get in here. Yeah. Let me get in here real quick because you just talked about checking motives. So if everybody, if you have your big book, page 102, see, this book is a magic book. It tells you exactly how to live. It's not just for sponsoring and getting off alcohol, cocaine, or a stranger. This is how to live every day. So at the bottom of page 102, it says, have I any good social business or personal reason for going to this place? Or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure? Women, are you going into a meeting and as Chris Raymer likes to say, with your bangles and your boobs out and your hot shorts and you're ready to like show the room who you are? That's not what we're doing here. Get back to the club. Get back to the strip club, Nikki. That's not what this is about. This is about entering the world of the spirit, because you do all 12 steps all damn day. You make a decision every day to show up as a man and a woman of God. And I'm going to repeat it again to the people in the back. Men and women of God don't take their sex powers lightly. I mean, this is serious stuff. And it says, I love what Cameron took us through, the exact instructions. It says exact instructions in our book about talking about other people. If it's going to hurt somebody else, you have to secure them. You have to get a yes. And most people don't want to know. Women, do you want to know who your husband cheated or your boyfriend cheated on you with? Because I don't. I don't want to know what she looked like, what she smelled like, because I won't touch your penis again. Go deep with people. This is serious stuff. We're trying to heal here, not cause more damage. And I love what Cameron said about the properly appointed authority. Like, I sponsor a lot of men and their sex conduct is illegal. And women, you too. Wake up. I was planning a murder homicide. That's illegal in Toronto, Canada. Okay, I just wasn't caught. So long story short, make sure if you're a sponsor, you don't hear these things. I don't need to hear what you did, who you did it with. Share in a general way the morals, because you can be implicated in some of these things too. And it's real stuff. We're living in 2022, 2025. Porn addiction is real. Okay? Sex addiction is real. Child trafficking is real. Yeah, these are dark subjects, but we're going to talk about it. So wake yourself up. Wake your sponsees up. Wake the rooms up. Because we don't need another person dying or going to jail. We need people, as Cameron says, on the firing lines with us. Because this is, it says, a radically changed attitude. And a radically changed attitude is not just stop doing drugs. I stopped eating at the all-you-can-eat buffet. I stopped cheating on my taxes. No, this is all or nothing. God is everything or God is nothing. So when we do sharebacks, again, there's a lot of questions on the table here. Get your mind that God gave you working. What does it look like to show up as a woman of God, ladies? Men, grown men, you're all over 18. You're men. What does it look like to show up of like a man of God? Question, are you going to sleep with a woman that you don't intend to marry and she has children and you don't care about those children? Wake yourself up. Cameron, I need to come over and hang out in the bunkie after this. I'm getting all round up. Whoa.
Yes, I had no idea what monster I was unleashing on the fellowship when I took Nikki through the steps. I just want, as we conclude here, I just want to say that, you know, Nikki and I are pretty, you know, open books and forthcoming and blunt in some respects. And we hope that no one here listening to this share and some of these self-revealing accounts about us will be taken in bad taste. Our hope is only that many addicted people here today, desperately in need of a solution, will see this share and believe that, you know, in our disclosure of ourselves and our work with sex, with the sex problems of our program, we'll realize, you know, hey, I'm like them. They seem to be like me, but they seem to be on a different track. And we hope that you'll want to join us on that too. So I'll conclude with this prayer in our big book around sex amends. We ask God to mold our ideals, to help us live up to them. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, and for sanity and strength to do the right thing. And I'm for that. How about you? God bless. See you on the firing lines of recovery, everyone.